Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
It's time for a pro-life roundup with Dr. Michael New. What is the future of the Hyde Amendment? Why is it good policy? Are pro-life laws effective at actually reducing the number of abortions worldwide? And has the pandemic been an opportunity for the proponents of abortion to expand access to chemical abortion? Dr. Michael New joins us to talk about some of these things. He's visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the Hyde Amendment. Why have congressional Democrats renewed their efforts to sink the Hyde Amendment?
I think there's just been a shift in the Democratic Party that supporters of legal abortion tend to be a lot more vocal and a lot more visible than they used to. The House has passed a budget, is going to pass a budget for 2021. This budget currently contains Hyde Amendment language, which would prevent taxpayer funding of elective abortions through the Medicaid program. And this past week, or I guess last week, you had a few Democratic congressmen go ahead and propose an amendment that would strip this language, the Hyde language, from this budget bill. Now, it doesn't look like this amendment's going to make it to the floor of the House for a vote. It looks like the Hyde Amendment is safe for the time being, but you do have a contingent of Democrats that strongly supports legal abortion, and they just really want to advertise that position to their supporters and to the general public.
Give us a brief history of the Hyde Amendment.
Sure. The Roe v. Wade decision came down in 1973, and I think most pro-lifers realized that we were not going to be able to overturn Roe in the short term. We could still do some positive things. And one positive incremental step we could make was trying to get the federal government out of the business of funding elective abortions through the Medicaid program. So in 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde put together a piece of legislation that did exactly that. It basically limited the ability of the federal government to pay for elective abortions through Medicaid. And this Hyde Amendment was passed. It was passed with bipartisan support. Over 100 House Democrats actually voted in favor. It was challenged in court, which should come as no surprise. And after about 4 years of working its way through the court system, in 1980, in Harris v. McRae, the Supreme Court upheld the Hyde Amendment. You know, they said abortion is legal, but we don't have to pay for elective abortions with taxpayer dollars. So the Hyde Amendment was upheld in 1980. It's interesting, the U.S. abortion rate has fallen almost every year since, and the Hyde Amendment has been part of every budget bill ever since. It was weakened a little bit during the Clinton years of the 90s, but it's been around, and it continues to save thousands of lives every year to this day.
Why did Hyde enjoy broad bipartisan support for decades and decades?
Partly because you had a lot of Democrats that represented moderate districts. Another reason is that kind of a big part of the Democratic Party's electoral coalition used to be older Democrats. You know, these are Democrats that came of age during the Great Depression or World War II. These Democrats tend to support unions and some social programs, but they were socially conservative. So essentially, Democrats realized they couldn't necessarily offend this constituency. So for a long time, the Democratic Party was comfortable with a world where abortion was legal, but by and large, not funded with federal taxpayer dollars. So a lot of Democrats, you know, wanted to, you know, appeal to some of their constituents who were, you know, more moderate or more conservative on social issues, and the Hyde Amendment was a good way for them to do that.
When did opposition to the Hyde Amendment begin? When was it kind of noticeable again?
Well, Heinlein has always had some opposition to it. I mean, it was never passed unanimously. But you really saw opposition to Hyde become a lot more visible about 4 years ago. I thought it was actually very telling that the Democratic Party, I think every platform since 1980, came out in support of legal abortion and in support of Roe v. Wade. But they didn't start talking about the Hyde Amendment until 2016, when they nominated Hillary Clinton for president. So that was really the first time the Democratic Party platform explicitly came out against the Hyde Amendment. So it was really at that point when you really saw kind of a critical mass of people in the Democratic Party not only favor legal abortion, but also favoring requiring taxpayers to pay for elective abortions with their taxpayer dollars.
Do the American people want taxpayer-funded abortion? What do the polls tell us?
Absolutely not. That most people oppose taxpayer-funded abortion. I've looked at 7 polls conducted during the past 4 years. They use different question wordings. They're done by different survey research firms. All 7 show that a plurality of Americans oppose taxpayer funding of abortion, and 6 of the 7 show that clear majorities oppose taxpayer funding of elective abortion. So there is a split in this country, obviously, about whether abortion should be legal or illegal, but by and large, most people oppose taxpayer funding of abortion. That's been shown in, you know, many, many surveys that have come up. Results tend to be very, very consistent.
You say that Hyde is just good policy. Explain how.
Absolutely. There's a very broad body of research that shows that when you cut off taxpayer funding for abortion, abortion rates go down. A very ideologically diverse group of researchers agree with this. Guttmacher released a literature review, I think, back in 2009 that looked at a range of studies about limiting taxpayer funding for abortion. They concluded, based on the research, that limits on taxpayer funding of abortion stop abortions. The Center for Reproductive Rights did an analysis of the Hyde Amendment back, I guess, in 2010. They found that it stopped about 1 million abortions since 1976. My own research for the Loser Institute, which I first published in 2016 and recently updated, has shown that since 1976, the Hyde Amendment has saved over 2.4 million lives. So the Hyde Amendment saves, you know, thousands of lives every year. My estimate is it saves about 60,000 lives every year. So people shouldn't believe that pro-life efforts don't make any difference. It's obvious because of the efforts of pro-lifers, there's millions of people, you know, walking around today who owe their lives to the Hyde Amendment, and there's millions of women who've been saved a lifetime of regret because of the Hyde Amendment. So the Hyde Amendment protects people, it saves lives, it's good policy, and it should continue.
What should Senate Republicans do to continue to support Hyde?
Well, right now the Hyde Amendment looks pretty safe this budget cycle, but in a situation where a Democratic majority in the House decides to pass a budget that does not include the Hyde Amendment, Senate Republicans need to come out, you know, very clearly and just state that any budget that they will pass must include the Hyde Amendment. You know, essentially, I think that's a fight that Republicans would win. Again, polls show very clearly most people don't want their taxpayer dollars paying for elective abortions. So Republicans just need to be very clear about this, saying that, you know, if the House does go ahead and passes a budget in the future that does not include Hyde, Republicans just need to stand firm and say, we only will pass a budget that includes a Hyde Amendment, and if we're forced to vote on a budget that does not, we will vote it down.
Turning to the subject of abortion law internationally, tell us about a recent study from The Lancet Global Health.
Yeah, Lancet Global Health did an interesting study. It looked at some different things. They collected worldwide data from probably over 100 countries. It looked at data from, I think, 1990 to about 2019. It looked at unintended pregnancy rates country by country. It looked at abortion rates country by country. And I think most importantly, I think the most important statistic it looked at and provided some good data on was it looked at the percentage of unintended pregnancies that were carried to term country by country. So we had some pretty good comprehensive data on abortions, unintended pregnancies, and percentage of unintended pregnancies carried to term that was presented in this recent Lancet Global Health study.
Why is that percentage of unintended pregnancies carried to term so important in your thinking?
Well, I think it's the most important statistic, or one of the most important statistics, because I think it shows very nicely kind of how effective the pro-life movement is and how effective pro-life laws are. That, you know, country by country, looking at, you know, cross-country comparisons of abortion rates doesn't always tell us much. Some countries have higher rates of unintended pregnancies than others. Some countries have just much higher poverty rates than others. And so country-by-country comparisons of abortion rates don't tell us much. What I think is a lot more telling is looking at the percentage of unintended pregnancies carried to term. And one thing that the study tells us, with very good data that's held up over many years, is that in those countries with pro-life laws in effect, a higher percentage of unintended pregnancies are in fact being carried to term. So it really does show us that laws work and the legal status of abortion matters. Again, in those countries that do have some legal protection for unborn children, those unborn children are a lot more likely to be born and less likely to be aborted.
What is the problem with most studies of this kind?
The problem with most studies of this kind isn't the results, but the way the results are being spun. That Guttmacher and some other groups to support legal abortion are kind of jumping on some findings, and they're claiming that countries where abortion is restricted, those countries have very similar abortion rates to those countries where abortion is legal. And again, the problem you have is that you're just comparing apples to oranges. Most of the countries where abortion is restricted, these countries are in Africa, the Middle East, South America. These countries have very high poverty rates very often. These countries often have higher rates of unintended pregnancy very often. So you really just can't make good comparisons between some of these very low-income countries and kind of richer Western democracies. So, Guttmacher is trying to make the case that pro-life laws don't work. But again, if you look at the right question, and again, the important question here is the percentage of unintended pregnancies carried to term, you do see that pro-life laws do work, that unintended pregnancies are a lot more likely to be carried to term in those countries that do have good pro-life laws in place.
So what is the pro-life takeaway from this study in The Lancet Global Health?
The pro-life take should clearly be that legal protections of unborn children are effective. Again, the data from every, they look at a series, of five different data points between 1990 and 2019. And in each of them, in those countries that have some pro-life laws in place, again, it doesn't necessarily mean that, all abortions are banned, but there are countries that do have some protections in place that a higher percentage of unintended pregnancies, are in fact being carried to term. So again, I just think that shows, very good data that pro-life laws do have a real impact here. So, again, that's the most important takeaway, that, again, we've seen other studies that have shown this. We have good data from Eastern Europe after the fall of communism. Many countries changed their policies regarding abortion. Some countries like Poland put protective laws in place, and we saw in countries that did that, abortion rates fell. So, again, it's just very clear that, the legal status of abortion does make a big difference. I think that from what we saw was that, according to the most recent data points, 70% of pregnancies were aborted in countries where abortion was legal, but in countries that had some legal protections in place, only 50% were aborted. So, again, these laws do have an impact.
You have written recently about expanding access to chemical abortion. First, what are chemical abortions?
Well, chemical abortions are abortions that are done through the RU46 pill. That some abortions are surgical, where, the unborn child is killed and removed by the physician, and others are chemical, where a woman typically takes one pill at an abortion facility and is given another pill and typically takes that pill later on, and that kind of triggers an abortion. So chemical abortions, this abortion pill regimen was first approved by the FDA in 2000. A lot of people thought that the Clinton administration put pressure on the FDA to approve chemical abortions more quickly than they should have, because they feared that the future Republican administration would not be inclined to approve them. They're typically done early in pregnancy. So, again, we see data indicating that even though overall abortion numbers are declining, the instance of chemical abortions are, in fact, going up.
So how have abortion supporters used the global pandemic as an opportunity to expand availability of chemical abortions?
Well, supporters of legal abortion have always been trying to make chemical abortions more available. In fact, even before the pandemic, the ACLU was filing lawsuits saying the current limitations on chemical abortions were unconstitutional. Now, they've been opportunistic during the pandemic. They did file a lawsuit, and as a result of that lawsuit, which I guess was resolved a couple weeks ago, women will be able to obtain chemical abortion pills either from a pharmacy or through mail order. They won't necessarily have to have an in-person visit with a physician to obtain a chemical abortion. And I think that's going to have some pretty severe health risks. It's possible that some of these women may have ectopic pregnancies, and undergoing a chemical abortion during an ectopic pregnancy poses some real health risks. We just know in general the chemical abortions tend to have a greater health risk than surgical abortions. We have good data from a study from California They used comprehensive data from the state Medicaid program. It found the complication rate with chemical abortions was 4 times the rate of complications with surgical abortions. So again, we just know these chemical abortions are already risky, and allowing women to do them without supervision just increases those risks.
It is being reported that abortions have increased during the pandemic. As far as you can tell, Dr. New, is this true?
A lot of the data we have is largely anecdotal. There are some abortion facilities that say their no-show rate is a lot lower. These abortion funds tragically offer financial help to women seeking abortions. They say they're getting more requests. The only real hard data we have comes from Florida. They are among the best states as far as providing timely data on the number of abortions that happen. My recollection is that as I guess at the end of June or as of early July, the number of abortions in Florida was running about 7% higher this year than last year. So again, looking at how we have both anecdotally and from the state of Florida, it does look like more abortions are happening this year than last year.
Finally, then, there is a recent Gallup poll. What have we learned from it about pro-life voters and how and why they plan to vote?
Well, one thing this Gallup poll showed us is that, you know, when it comes to the abortion issue, kind of single-issue pro-life voters outnumber single-issue, quote-unquote, pro-choice or pro-abortion voters. That I think that's a very important finding that pro-life should talk more about, that essentially a pro-life candidate always has kind of a built-in advantage over a pro-choice candidate because of single-issue voters. So when it comes to people, obviously, have different opinions on the issue. I think the most recent Gallup poll showed that pro-choice slightly, or people identified as pro-choice, slightly exceeded those who identified as pro-life. We look at how people vote, it's a little bit of a different story. Nearly every poll, including this Gallup poll, shows that kind of single-issue pro-life voters exceed single-issue pro-choice voters. You know, that means that candidates running pro-life nationally are at an advantage, and the pro-life issue is, you know, a winning issue politically.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and columnist for National Review Online. You can read his columns on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. New, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Friday on Issues Etc., we'll discuss why religious freedom is special with Emily Gao of the Heritage Foundation, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Listeners with the best votes win the Lutheran Public Radio bundle package, and I have Issues T-shirt, an Issues Etc. tote bag, note bag, pen, and bumper sticker. Listen and vote in advance at facebook.com/issuesetc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.
The third commandment teaches us to remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. We do this when we hold God's word sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Jesus invites the weak and heavy laden to rest in him, our true rest, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This weekend, rest in Jesus as you hear his word and receive his gifts. If you are in Southern Illinois, you're invited to join Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstatt to rest in the grace of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Learn more at trinitymillstatt.org.